The record cold winter is over, we hope. The sun is shining, almost. It's spring break and the kids are at home. We're reading your mind. You're saying, let me out of this house. I'm Brian Ellison. It's a situation that has day trip written all over it, and we at Central Standard are here to help. Today on the program, we'll talk with experts who will give you the ideas and the tools to find the hidden gems right outside your back door. Where can you go for fun and for rest? It may be closer than you think. And later, we'll take a look at the Hickman Mills School District in South Kansas City. They've been under fire after a state audit showed questionable business practices and turmoil on the school board. We'll check in to see what went wrong and what changes have been underway since those revelations. School board elections just a few weeks away. It's all ahead on Central Standard after the news. Today's high, 65 degrees. Tomorrow, 58. Thursday, 71. An unconfirmed report suggests that there's more where that came from, that for some months to come, it is possible we will not again be confined to our homes or put at risk of frostbite. And that means it's time to get out. It's time to see the city and the region that we call home. It's time for a day trip. Good morning, Kansas City. Welcome to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. Later today, we'll take a look at the recent travails of the Hickman Mills School District. But first, planning an afternoon or a whole staycation with things to do here in the metro or not too far away. Joining us to help from both sides of the state line are Alan Carr. He's Vice President of Marketing and Communication for Kansas City Convention and Visitors Association. Welcome to you, Alan.
Thanks for having me.
And also Amy Garten. She's Director of Interactive Solutions for the Overland Park Convention and Visitors Bureau. Welcome, Amy.
Thank you.
Glad you're both here. We also want to hear from you this morning, our listeners. Email us your day trip suggestions to centralstandard@kcur.org. You can also send those to us by Twitter. We're at KCURCST. So let's start with you, Amy. What's it like getting paid to find fun stuff for people to do?
It's a great job. I love finding things for others to do, but then I use those ideas for myself and my family to explore Kansas City, a place that I just love.
Yeah, I have to say, maybe, Alan, you can make your case. Your job doesn't sound that hard. This sounds like a great job.
Well, you know, I tell everyone that asks, there's no better job than trying to ignite passion for the place that you live. And that's what we're all about. We're all about encouraging people to go out and have fun and explore the city and explore the region. And so it's fun to do that every day.
Well, we will try to put your gifts and talents and experience to help with our listeners this morning. You know, before we get to sort of the specific suggestions for places, maybe it would be good to talk about how you go about finding the right thing for a particular person or a certain family to do. Do you have any tips for ways that people can start to make those decisions, Alan?
Well, you know, I think the first thing is, you know, travel is something that for one person, they're going to have a different travel experience based on who they're with. And so first figure out who you're going to do something with. You know, if it's for a family, then obviously that's going to change what you're going to do than if you're just going to do something with your husband or wife or with your girlfriends. Uh-huh. So think about who do you want to go and do something fun with? And that's the best place to start. And then one of the ways we organize our website is we have different trip suggestions based on your audience and the things you're interested in. So whether it's a family trip or a girlfriend's getaway or maybe a little couple's vacation. And so you can find specific suggestions based on that.
And I know both of you have websites for your organization, so we'll make sure you get a chance to sell us those before the end of the hour. We'll also put them up at our website, which is kcur.org. Amy, you know, we're talking a lot about day trips today. What is a day trip? How far a radius can you really legitimately talk about as a thing to do from the metro area?
In Overland Park, we define a day trip as about 3 hours or maybe a stretch of 150 miles, depending on what attraction might be just outside of that three-hour mark. Some place like Hutchison or down to Baxter Springs qualify for us. We also recommend a few places in Nebraska and Iowa as well.
And similar for you, Alan, how far out can we go and still call it a day trip?
Well, you know, I think it's how adventurous you are. You know, if you want to spend a lot of time in the car, you know, I've done St. Louis as a day trip before, mm-hmm. but that's about 8 hours drive
right
there and back. So that's doesn't leave a lot of time to do things once you get there. So I think the first thing you have to figure out is how much time do you want to spend in your car and how much time do you want to spend doing things.
And what kind of drive you want, too. The 8 hours, those are not the most fun 8 hours of driving that Missouri has to offer.
That's right.
So what do people tend to find most popular? What kind of trip? I mean, I know that you monitor kind of the web traffic at your website to see. What do people tend to look for?
In Overland Park, a lot of our people are looking for the family-friendly. They also like our foodie and chocolate tours that we offer on our website.
Ah.
Very popular this year is a new wine tour that we have just put out.
So I want to hear more about that. I didn't know there was a Kansas wine tour, so we'll have to talk about that. Alan, do you find that people are looking for certain kinds of trips more than others?
Yeah, it varies by season, but you know, right now, especially with spring break coming on, family travel is really big. So people are looking, where can I go with the kids? So we've seen a lot of people searching for that. Foodie and food travel is always really important, and in our region, we've seen great growth in spirits. As Amy mentioned, both wineries and breweries, we have a ton more of those than we had a decade or even 5 years ago. And so this is something that you've seen an explosion of those opportunities, and there's a lot of places that you can find within about an hour drive of Kansas City. There's more than 30 wineries.
Well, let me ask our listeners, are you looking for a certain kind of outing, a particular interest or an age group that you're trying to satisfy? Call us and ask our experts for yourself. Our number is 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. You can also email us your question or your ideas at centralstandard@kcur.org. Once again, that number, 816-235-2888. Well, let's jump right in. Let's talk about some of the day trips that are out there. Let's start on the Missouri side of the line, Alan. What are a few of your favorites for places people can go in the region that is not too far away?
Well, I never play favorites.
Okay.
So some of the ones that
randomly select a few.
Yeah,
for
within
us.
An hour of Kansas City, you know, some of the places I would definitely look at. Weston, Missouri is a great, great day trip. You know, this is the community that the Missouri River left. They had a great flood, and the river bed changed course, and so it was a city now that the river was 2 miles away. They've done a great job of preserving their history. So if you like to shop, they have a great area of shops.
Yeah, great little downtown.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
Really cute.
Lovely bed and breakfast. They have a great restored hotel, the St. George, that's great. There's three wineries located there, so as well as a pub, O'Malley's. If you haven't been, you've got to go and check out the caverns there where they have live music all the time.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Weston. I wonder, Alan, is that one of those places that you should wait and go for one of the festivals? I know they have an Apple Festival. They have all these different little festivals. Or is that good anytime?
Well, you know, you can go. I think the great thing about these towns is the style changes based on when you go. So all these little towns have festivals throughout the year. And if you go during that time, you're going to have a much different experience as if you just pick a weekend and go. And it'll be maybe a little more relaxed and a little easier to do things. But if you want that atmosphere of a lot of different activities and lots of music and things going on, then pick a festival weekend and go then.
Sure. What's another one? What's something that's new or timely or particularly important right now?
Well, you know, one that over the last year has seen a lot of progress is Excelsior Springs.
Hmm.
Again, not that far away, about 30 to 45 minutes away, but the Elms, which is their great resort there just a year ago, or maybe it's a little over a year ago now, went under a $20 million renovation.
Yeah.
So they now have what they call the largest spa in the region. They have a massive spa. It's kind of taking it back to its roots of, you know, when Excelsior Springs were this place where people flocked to for the mineral waters.
Right, the actual springs.
Yeah. And actually they have a self-guided tour you can do and explore the springs that made Excelsior Springs famous. But the Elms is gorgeous. It is a great, especially adult getaway or girlfriend getaway. You can go spend a weekend at the spa, especially as the weather gets warmer. They've got a great outdoor pool as well as indoor pools. And if you're interested in history, the Hall of Waters is just a beautiful building, and it's home to the world's longest water bar where you can actually sample some of the waters, mineral waters, both from Excelsior Springs and from around the world.
I can't name any other water bars, so I don't have any trouble believing that's the world's longest. But that's Excelsior Springs. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking about day trips within an hour or two or maybe three of the Kansas City metro area. Alan Carr is with the Kansas City Convention and Visitors Association, and Amy Garten is with the Overland Park Convention and Visitors Bureau. Amy, how about the Kansas side? Where are a couple of your top choices for day trip getaways?
A day trip for kids that I really love is to head over to Topeka. You can swing up to Wamego and visit the Oz Museum, which has actual artifacts from the making of the movie of The Wizard of Oz. And this year is a big celebration year for The Wizard of Oz,
that's right.
So that's great. Right now, the Capitol is offering dome tours, so you can go up and outside of the dome at the Kansas Capitol Building. They've opened recently a new museum called the Kansas Children's Discovery Center, which is a very large children's museum to explore things like money, science, agriculture, a variety of different centers that they have within that museum for kids. And then on your way back, you can...
Now, where's that? Where's the children's museum?
That's in Topeka.
In Topeka, okay.
Yes. Very similar to the children's museum that they have in St. Louis as well, only a little bit closer to Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the way back, you can stop at a place called Henry's Plant Farm, and it's a very large greenhouse, but they also have animals, and you can interact with the plants and animals, therefore kind of the agricultural experience.
Amy, do you find that you mentioned the Capitol tour. I know there's just been a big renovation at the state capitol
in
Kansas.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, I've heard it's beautiful. I haven't seen it yet. I wonder, do people go to that sort of day trip just to kind of see a building, see a place because of its significance, its cultural significance like that? Or do they want something that's more, I don't know, fun?
There's
no water slides at the state capitol.
No, there are not. But I will say that I've had the opportunity to do the dome tour twice, once at night and once during the day. And even though you are experiencing a building in all of its glory, because now the copper has been polished and is once again that beautiful, shiny material, not the green, but you get to walk about 250 steps through the top of the dome, which is an adventure in and of itself. I will say, not for the faint of heart to go outside on that dome. So it does take a little bit of an adventuresome. And that's why I would say you can do that and then go to the Children's Museum so that they can burn off the energy that they built up doing the tour.
From being on a tour inside.
Yeah.
816-235-2888 is the number to call. What's the best day trip that you've taken around Kansas City? Maybe it's something we've all done or heard of, you think? Maybe it's a hidden gem. Let us know. 816-235-2888 with your favorite day trips in Kansas City or the surrounding region of Missouri and Kansas. Alan Carr, you mentioned a couple that are really good adult trips. What would be some recommendations for kids that you would have?
Well, you know, something – everyone loves Walt Disney.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many people – you know, obviously, we know that he has a history around Kansas City.
Yeah.
Marceline, Missouri, which is about 2 hours from here, northeast of Kansas City, was his boyhood home. So this is where they moved from Chicago. And they have done a lot to really showcase their Disney heritage. So it's actually said that Main Street Marceline was the model for Main Street USA in the Disney parks.
Wow.
You can tour the Walt Disney Hometown Museum. They've got a lot of different history around his time in Marceline. And one interesting fact, they're the only place outside of Disneyland that Disney allowed a working ride to operate. So they have an actual Disney ride inside the museum. They've also got Walt's barn and Dreaming Tree, which were things that helped inspire him as a boy in growing up in Marceline. So that's a great place. And then they host a Toon Fest every September.
That's a place I wouldn't have known about without you mentioning it. Amy, you were talking a few minutes ago about the wine tour of Kansas City or of Kansas. What's that all about?
Yes, the Somerset Wine Trail is located in Miami County. It features four wineries and a beautiful bed and breakfast called the Casa de Somerset. The wine trail has a boutique winery, a larger winery that offers about 20 different wines, and then two additional wineries. They have several different events that happen, a cycling event, so you can ride your bike from winery to Winery that comes up in April. Harvest begins in August, late August. And the unique thing about those wineries is they rely very heavily on volunteer harvesters. So you are actually helping harvest the grapes that will go into the wines that they will use.
So you have to participate. You can't just look.
Exactly. And if you want to stay overnight, the Casa de Somerset has an award-winning chef that helps do their bed and breakfast experience.
How's the wine? Kansas wine. Tell us what that's like.
It's phenomenal.
Okay. I will admit
that I am less of a wine drinker, so I prefer the sweet wines. I haven't acquired a bitter taste yet, and I'm sure that that's not even the right word for wines. But before Prohibition, Kansas and Missouri actually produced 90% of the wine in the United States.
Really?
Yes. And we are getting back to that level. Not quite 90%, obviously, but we are starting to make headway. We are the fastest growing region for wine producing.
We'll have information about these opportunities as well as others on our website, kcur.org. And why don't we let Amy and Alan go ahead and tell us the websites for their organizations, too. Amy?
Our website is visitoverlandpark.com, and right on the homepage, we have a button for day trip destinations.
There you go. And how about you, Alan?
We are at visitkc.com. We've got tons of information on our site. You can also tweet us at visitkc or follow us on any of our social channels and send us your pictures on Instagram, etc.
Very good. 816-235-2888. Is the number to call with your favorite day trips around the Kansas City area. Jim is calling us from Overland Park. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
So you have some ideas for folks?
Yeah, I had a comment about some day trips for birders. You can go to the Squaw Creek National Wildlife Refuge in Mound City, Missouri, which is about 50 miles north of St. Joe. And this would be a great time because there's a lot of migratory birds, ducks, geese, eagles, yeah, and also some other wildlife, deer and coyotes is what we saw last time we were there.
And, Jim, how much of an expert on birds would you have to be to really appreciate and enjoy that kind of trip?
Well, you'd want to bring a pair of binoculars and maybe a basic bird guide like Sibley's bird or Peterson's bird guide and try to figure out what bird you're seeing.
Okay, great suggestion. You have one more?
Pardon me?
You had another suggestion, too?
Overland Park Arboretum, which is a little south of town. There's some nice kids activities. There's a garden train set up outside where kids can watch model railroads go through some scenic areas, and they're expanding the area. They're going to put a model of the Strangline trolley this year, which would be fun for kids to see. It would be a diet. Be some buildings from Old Overland Park and a trolley to see go up and down the tracks.
Hey, Jim, I really appreciate the suggestions. Thanks so much.
Okay.
Jim has mentioned a couple of nature-related options. I saw, Amy, you were vigorously nodding your head at the Arboretum. Do either one of you have other suggestions if folks are looking for a natural getaway?
Yeah, the Flint Hills of Kansas is a beautiful natural getaway. You can start at the Discovery Center in Manhattan, head south on Highway 177 to Council Grove, and stop at the Trails Day Cafe. They offer a very unique menu of early settlers food, including Native American foods. The Tallgrass Prairie National Preserve is near Strong City, and you can take ranger-led tours, or you can hike or bike the area yourself, and then you can stay the night in the Grand Central Hotel, an award-winning hotel from AAA.
Yeah, hard to compete with the Flint Hills, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
Just named one of the 7 best places to watch the sunset and has been in National Geographic. But I did want to say, for birding, the Arboretum is now offering a children's birding activity. So you can check our website or the Arboretum's website for more on that. So it kind of ties back to Jim's comments on places to go birding.
Okay. How about you, Alan?
Well, if you want a little more active outdoor adventure, the Katy Trail is fantastic, especially for biking or hiking. You can pick that up down in Clinton, Missouri.
Yeah, remind us, it starts down in Clinton. You can head east.
And it goes all the way to St. Louis. One of the I think best areas for it is around Rocheport, Missouri, right off of I-70, right on the Missouri River. Rocheport has built up a great town with bed and breakfast, antique shops, Les Bourgeois Winery, another one of those great wineries. You can sit out on the bluffs of the river overlooking the Missouri River, and it's beautiful scenery, and stop and have a drink and then get back on your bike and head down the trail.
but carefully.
Carefully.
816-235-2888 is the number to call. Let's talk with Murray in Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning, Murray.
Good morning. I was just going to say that if you were in Topeka and you were heading back towards Kansas City, you might want to stop in Warren, just inside the gate of Haskell University, is the Native American Cultural Center, which is really wonderful. There's all kinds of things to see. The Native American history in Warren and at Haskell is all there. I'm not sure if they're open on the weekends or not, but it is a wonderful place for families to visit.
Great suggestion, Murray. We really appreciate it. Thanks for calling.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, Native American culture, a huge part of the history of this region, and a few different places folks can learn more about it, right?
Absolutely, and Haskell is a great place to stop in Lawrence, as well as Lawrence just in general. There's a number of great things you can do there, from the Dole Institute of Politics to the great downtown area with great food and shops.
Jumping back to the questions about nature, we had an email from Gabby. She wrote, "Are there any waterfalls within 3 to 4 hours of Kansas City?" I don't know the answer to that. I can't think of any, but can either of you? Waterfalls?
I know down in southeast Missouri, the land gets a little more rugged, and it's escaping me. There's Tomsock Mountain, and I believe they have a little waterfall near there. There may be some things closer, but it's not coming to my mind.
Yeah, not a lot of elevation changes in the immediate vicinity. 816-235-2888 is the number to call. Let's talk to Jesse in Leavenworth. Jesse, good morning.
I don't know if anyone mentioned it. I know you talked about Weston, but just to the west of Weston, there is a state park that has a fantastic view of the river with chairs and seats. You can sit there and watch the river go by, the Missouri River, a nature trail, camping sites. You can actually take a road that they use to launch boats and go all the way down and stand on the banks of the Missouri if you want to. But it's almost a well-kept secret. Have a tobacco barn, too. Shows you how they hang up hung tobacco to dry. I really recommend that place. It's plenty to do, and they have campsites.
Really appreciate the call, Jesse. Weston Bend State Park.
That's right, Weston Bend State Park. A great site to explore the Missouri River.
I guess I'm curious, for both of you are experts here. What if you don't even want to drive an hour? What if you want to drive like 10 minutes? Do you have a super close suggestion that you think folks maybe don't fully appreciate?
Yeah. Well, we call that a staycation.
Yeah.
And we love the staycation. So a couple things going on right now. Crown Center, it's a great place to take the kids. They've got an exhibit for Oz for the 70th anniversary. In their changing gallery, which is a great exhibit exploring that history. Sea Life Aquarium just opened up a crab exhibit. And so they have some really unique crabs, including a coconut crab, which is named after the fact that it is able to open coconuts with its claws.
Yeah. And that's inside the Crown Center. A lot of folks don't even know the aquarium is there.
Yeah.
How about you, Amy? Any right here at home suggestions?
Yeah, Deanna Rose is going to open April 1st, which is maybe not that unheard of, but they are going to have 3 new attractions opening on that site this year. So we'll be very excited to have some changes happening on that park. Bonner Springs has Adventure Zipline, so you can go ziplining here in Kansas City.
Ah.
And Cookie Doodle is a little art studio for children in downtown Overland Park. So if your kid maybe prefers the arts and culture side of things, you could take them down there.
816-235-2888. Let's talk to Marcy in Lee's Summit. Good morning, Marcy.
Hi. I was actually going to suggest Deanna Rose. I've enjoyed it since I was a kid, and now I enjoy taking my daughter there. So, and then I was going to suggest the Amtrak. You can take out of Lee's Summit. You can take it clear to St. Louis even, or to Jefferson City and see the Missouri Capitol.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. What do you really like about Vienna Roads? I don't think everybody has been there. What is your favorite part of it? What's so attractive about
it? I love that you get to interact with the animals. You get to feed them. You get to pet them. They have a playground in there. You can let your kids just run and play and have fun and not really worry about them too much, you know. And it's educational at the same time. They don't know they're learning.
Yeah, it's always good to trick the kids into learning, isn't it?
And they have trails in the back that people don't think realize are back there too, where they have like an animal sanctuary where they have animals that are healing, that they've found in the wild, and that they're going to release a lot of them back into the wild when they heal. So it's just it's just real educational and fun at the same time.
Marcy, thanks so much for the call.
Sure.
In answer to our earlier question about waterfalls, we had an email at centralstandard@kcur.org from Seth in Lee's Summit. He said that Dogwood Canyon Nature Park, just outside of Branson, has beautiful waterfalls. So it's stretching it for a day trip, but we have at least some waterfalls in Missouri, right? Let's take one more call from Lario in I don't know where Lario's calling from. Lario, where are you calling from?
Oh, I'm in North Kansas City.
Great. Tell us your thoughts or suggestions.
All right. Are you familiar with the British science fiction television show Doctor Who?
I am.
Okay. Well, this Saturday at the Central Resource Library in Overland Park, there will be a Doctor Who party.
Okay.
It runs from 1 to 4 p.m., and I'm not associated with the library. I was in there, and I saw the flyer for it. And I'll just quickly read to you what it says.
Actually, you don't need to read it to us, but we can let folks know that that's there, and they can check out the Doctor Who party. I day trips take a lot of different forms, right?
That's right. You know, there's events going on all the time around our region, and so both of our websites have great events calendars. So if you're looking for kind of that last minute thought of what to do tonight or what to do this weekend, go to visitkc.com or Overland Park's website, and you'll find some great ideas for events happening around the region.
You know, I also think that there's probably a lot of places in Kansas City that sort of keep on giving, even if you've been there before, even if you've been there 20 times before. I'm thinking I just moved down not far from the Nelson Atkins, and I think, you know, if you can spend 25 or 30 minutes there, see a couple of galleries, you can go back 20 times and never be disappointed.
That's right. You know, we have such a great mix of museums in this town, and I really encourage locals to get out and explore it. I mean, we've probably got 5 or 6 places that other cities would kill to have. The Nelson Atkins is one of those, the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, the American Jazz Museum, the Steamboat Arabia, Union Station. I could go on and on, but get out and explore your city, because there's some great experiences to be had.
816-235-2888. We got a couple more calls here. Kay is in Leawood. Good morning, Kay.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. It sounds like you've been to the wine tour that Amy was telling us about earlier, the Somerset Ridge Tour. Is that right?
I have. It's wonderful. It's absolutely amazing. You know, most people think wine in Kansas, but, you know, Missouri and Kansas were some of the largest wine-growing areas before Prohibition. So it's not surprising. There's many, many vineyards popping up everywhere now.
Okay,
there's Somerset Ridge.
So, Kay, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Amy confessed that she is not the leading wine expert in the area. It sounds like you might know something about wine. How would you characterize the wine along the Somerset Ridge Wine Tour?
It's wonderful. It's amazing. Somerset Ridge, the vintner there, the owner is Dennis Reynolds, and he's an amazing winemaker. Just absolutely incredible. They win Jefferson Medal every year for one or more of their wines. What I really wanted to say was on May 24th and 25th, they're having their Art in the Vines. They are very much into supporting local businesses, local people, local products, and local artists. And on those two dates, it's Saturday and Sunday before Memorial Day, they have like 30 to 40 artists hanging all their works of art in the vines. You can wander around with a glass of wine. There's food trucks there. It's wonderful. It's a great way to spend the day. It's a great family adventure. So anybody looking for something to do that weekend should definitely go.
Hey, really appreciate that, Kay. Thank you so much for calling.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. So before we go, and I am going to take one more call, but I want to ask our guests to be thinking about the one last day trip they would suggest, the thing that that you're afraid nobody's going to know about unless you mention it on the radio today. Let's talk to Elizabeth. She is calling us from Overland Park. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning.
You have a suggestion for a good outing for families or for folks in the Kansas City area?
Yeah, a lot of my friends and I, we like to go on First Saturdays to the West Bottom, where they have all different sorts of vendors, and it's great for foodies or shoppers, and it's just, there's something new every single time you go.
Yeah, they sell a lot of antique furniture, right, especially?
Yeah, anything refurbished in, you know, any sort of design you could want, you'll find there.
That's a great suggestion, Elizabeth. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
I think, in fact, that goes on the first Friday, Saturday, Sunday, all weekend long, if I'm not mistaken, down in the West Bottoms. Let me invite our guests, who are Alan Carr of the Kansas City Convention and Visitors Association and Amy Garten of Overland Park's Convention and Visitors Bureau, to share one last suggestion. Amy?
I would be remiss if I didn't mention that Overland Park is opening in May the museum at Prairie Fire. This museum is the Heartland Outpost for the American Museum of Natural History, based in New York City. And we will feature rotating exhibits from that museum at the museum located in Southern Overland Park.
And Alan Carr.
Well, I'll give you a highway. It's Highway 36. It runs from St. Joseph, Missouri to Hannibal, Missouri. And they've dubbed it the Way of the American Genius because of the number of famous people that grew up along that highway. So you've got where Jesse James died. You can explore the Walt Disney history that I mentioned earlier. J.C. Penney, I don't know if you know, he's from Missouri.
Didn't know.
You can visit his museum. General John Pershing. And then, of course, Mark Twain and Hannibal.
Well, I wish we had more time. I wish we could do this all day. Amy Garten was with the Overland Park, and Alan Carr with Kansas City's Convention and Visitors Association. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to all our listeners who called in and wrote by email with their suggestions, too. When we come back, we'll take a look at the Hickman Mills School District in South Kansas City, where a state audit this month found serious problems with contracting and financial management practices and turmoil on the school board, too. We'll talk with a reporter who unearthed some of the practices, and we'll hear how the board is trying to move forward in light of the revelations. So stay tuned. I'm Brian Ellison. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. The Hickman Mills School District in South Kansas City has 6,000 students, a high school, a middle school, a junior high, 8 elementary schools. It has more than a century-long history and a character part urban and part suburban, about 10 miles from downtown. But these have not been its best few years. It fell to provisional accreditation in 2012, with scores in some areas lower than those of the Kansas City, Missouri public schools. Turmoil on the school board has made headlines and attracted critical local press reports. And 2 weeks ago, the Missouri State Auditor released a devastating report, citing financial instability and weak accountability and numerous violations of open meeting laws and generally accepted procedures. So what does it all mean for those 6,000 students, for the new superintendent, for the school board elections that are now just 3 weeks from today? Joining us to sort it out and tell us what's happening now are Hickman Mills School Board Vice President Dan Osmond. Welcome to you, Dan.
Thank you very much.
Glad you're here. And Steve Vockrott, he's a reporter for The Pitch, who covered a number of these revelations last month before the audit was released. Welcome to you, Steve.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
We're glad you're here. Steve, let me start with you. Walk us quickly through some of the key findings of that audit.
Sure. Many of the key findings centered around some of the business practices that were going on with the school district. For instance, there were some no-bid contracts that went out against board policy. The amounts weren't tremendous, but there was enough that there was a pattern of these things that suggested that the school district's or the school board's house was not in order.
What kind of contracts were these?
These were contracts for things like trying to, you know, one of the big ones was the search for the new superintendent, who's now the current superintendent. It was it started out as a $30,000 contract for a search firm that doesn't do just educational headhunting. And it was a no-bid contract when there is an organization in Missouri that could do it for less than half the cost. And so there were contracts like these that were suspicious. They went to some organizations that had people who in them who were politically connected in some instances.
And we'll talk a little bit about that too. What were some of the other audit's findings?
Some of the other audit findings included the district was unable to keep track of some of the property. Things like iPads went missing. There were some instances of violations of the open meetings law, decisions that were being made behind closed doors that should be held in public meetings for the public to see, and things of that nature. But a lot of them centered around – a lot of the findings centered around just questionable business practices by the district.
And the school board president at the time, Alexander Bremen, came under particular fire in a lot of these findings, right?
Yeah. Bremen Anderson was the president from 2012 to the early part of 2013. And the audit took aim at him specifically in some instances. He was criticized for, in one instance, making a trip with other board members to San Diego and Boston for training for board members, but not attending very many of the sessions, or very few of them, in contrast with other board members. And that's something the district pays for, and it's a district that could use the money for other things.
Right. And one of the things that the audit seemed to lift up was the lack of cooperation from Bremen Anderson and from perhaps other members of the school board was part of what caused this to become a bigger deal, right?
Right. And, you know, one of the most surprising things, at least for me, when the audit did come out, was that he had to be subpoenaed by the state auditor to turn over certain documents, specifically contracts that were in his possession that were not with the business office where you would expect contracts to be. Right. And the auditor remarked that, you know, across 400 state audits that they've done of political subdivisions, they've probably had to issue subpoenas less than a dozen or less than 10 times. So it's a rare instance to get a lack of cooperation to that level.
Let me ask you, Dan Osman, you're vice president of the school board now. You weren't at the beginning of some of this process, but you've been a member of the board all that time. What was your reaction to some of these revelations?
Well, we knew about the information contained in the audit well before it came out public. So when we first found out about it, it was extremely surprising to us. Things of the nature of the number of contracts that came to us with ulterior motives and the number of contracts that came to us as no-bid contracts on the recommendation of Mr. Anderson. It was because of that audit that we were able to sort of piece things together and figure out what information we needed to take from it and move forward as a district. If I don't have the information necessary to make the correct decisions, I can't do my job on the board. And so I was even looking at filing a sunshine request to actually get some of the contracts that weren't in the business office that I believe were in other places in the district, possibly Mr. Anderson's private office in the district.
Did you actually do that as a school board member? You filed a sunshine law request?
Yes. I went into the business office and asked for some contracts because I needed to find out information. They didn't have them. So I went to other members of the administration, and they didn't have those contracts. And so I went to Mr. Anderson, and he denied having them. And so ultimately, I was left with the only way that I could possibly get it, which was file a sunshine request, which the auditors picked up on. In order to get all of the information necessary in order for me to make proper decisions, I had to have that information. So ultimately, when I filed those requests, the contracts did come back to me. They were unsigned, non-original, and some of them still aren't in the business office. But I do have at least that information now.
Do you disagree with any of the findings in the state auditor report?
I don't really disagree with a lot of it. I think that it was a thorough and comprehensive as far as what was contained in them. For me, they break down into two different subsections. One is board-related matters and one's administrative-related matters. The administration has known about the issues for their side of it for a year now, and they've been working diligently under Dr. Carpenter to correct a number of those issues. In fact, one of the problems that Steve just brought up was, as far as iPads are concerned, we actually just in the last board meeting had a new vendor that's going to come in and track all the technology that's coming in and going out of our district so that we know exactly where everything is at any given time. With board-related matters, we've been working as a board to try to correct those issues for the last year now. And that's one of the reasons that we've had that reorganization back in May, where Mr. Anderson is no longer the president of this district, but Eric Lowe is, and I'm the new vice president of this district, because we saw what was going on with this audit and we had to make changes.
I want to invite our listeners, if you're a parent or a teacher in the Hickman Mills School District, are you concerned about district administration and leadership these days? What part of the story are we missing? Are you satisfied that the school board is responding now to the auditor's claims and concerns? What do you think should be done? Give us a call, 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. We're also taking your comments on the KCUR Facebook page on this story, so check us out there. Steve Vakrat of The Pitch, your reporting and some other reporting on this issue has focused on the involvement of a Kansas City political club, a group called Freedom, Inc. Remind us who they are and how they're connected with this story.
Freedom, Inc. is they're a historical club. They've been around for about 50 years. They're primarily a black political club in town, and they've had varying levels of influence over the years. How much influence they have depends on who you talk to, and at certain times they seem to have more political influence than at other times. They've primarily been centered around kind of the inner core of the city. But in recent years, they have expanded their attention to further south in Kansas City, and that includes the Hickman Mills District. And last year was the first time that they formally got involved, according to them, in a Hickman Mills school election. And two candidates that they backed with financial help and their influence got elected, and for a short time helped form a majority on the board when some of these problems were starting to come up.
And can you draw a direct connection between these problems and that organization or the candidates or the school board members that they supported?
Well, if you look at some of the contracts that were being awarded against board policy, they went to companies and organizations that have people who are members of Freedom, Inc., who are receiving some of these contracts. In terms of a direct smoking gun, not necessarily, but if you connect some of these dots, you start to see some signs of their influence in the district.
Of people who were receiving contracts who had connections with the people who supported who they supported on the board.
Correct.
Dan, when you hear that sort of information, I don't know if you were supported by Freedom, Inc., what's your response to that?
The answer to that last question is no. When I ran back in 2011, Freedom, Inc. wasn't even on the map in Hickman Mills. And now in 2014, they requested that I screen with them for a possible endorsement, and I declined their invitation. I believe that other candidates have tried to screen with them. Now, I'll say this. There are a lot of different organizations that try to gain influence with, any member of a board. But it's our job to look at what's the financial best interest of this district and what's the academic best interest of this district. I felt that over the last about 2 years ago, we weren't really looking at either of those things in our board meetings. And now, since the reorganization, we have been focusing a lot more on that. And so, yes, I think Freedom, Inc. has been trying to give some influence. It's just a matter of whether the board members are receptive to that or not, and I'm not.
I guess I'm curious from you, Dan, in your role as vice president of the school board. You're also a candidate, we should mention. The school board elections are in 3 weeks. You're one of the three incumbents who are up for re-election, and there's seven challengers, so 10 people for those three spots.
Yes.
What is your sense of what's being done now on the board? I mean, you said you've had this information for some time. You've been trying to respond as a board. Now it's in the public eye. What is happening going forward? What's going to be different in Hickman Mills than it has been in the past?
Sure. Well, the auditors have even said during the night that they presented the audit, Mr. Otto, the deputy auditor, said that over the last 10 months, the cooperation of the district has gotten better. The district itself has gotten better. And I think that really comes down to two things. Dr. Carpenter coming into this district and the reorganization, where who became the new president and vice president. It really focused us more into academics and onto the financials. We're better off financially than we were even just last year. And more than that, we're focusing in on the academics. We've got, in just the last couple of months, we've been putting into place an early childhood education program for pre-K. So all four-year-olds next year will be able to go to school here in this district, which is going to be huge for the academics of it. We just reorganized start times based on some scientific information. This is something that no other district is doing, but we're looking at the scientific data and saying that the start times need to be modified to reflect what's going on with the kids' lives.
So does that mean later start times for like high school students?
Absolutely, yeah. It's going to be an 8:40 start time, an 8:40 start time for the secondary school students.
Steve Vakrat, what's been the reaction to these stories as well as to the audit coming out?
Well, certainly when the audit came out, I think the reaction was a little bit of surprise, and I think part of that is because there's so much attention that's given by the media and the public at large to the Kansas City, Missouri school district, which has a special set of issues facing them. But overlooked is the Hickman Mills School District, which, as you said, I mean, there's 6,000 students there. And while there's a lot of attention that goes to the accreditation status of the Kansas City School District, people forget that there is that the Hickman Mills School District's provisionally accredited, and there's questions over whether they can keep that distinction or what kind of progress they're going to make. And I think to kind of sum it up, a lot of people sort of forgot that Hickman Mills was there, and when these issues came to light, I think people were surprised because I don't know that anyone's watching to the degree that they should be. What's going on in the South Kansas City district that's an important district to the metro.
816-235-2888. That's the number to call if you have questions or to share your views on the Hickman Mills School District situation. 816-235-2888. You can also email us. We're at centralstandard@kcur.org. And we're also checking Twitter, @KCURCST. Also, you can make comments on the KCUR Facebook page. Dan Osmond, Vice President of the Hickman Mills School Board. These concerns about accreditation are real concerns. Mm-hmm. As Steve just said, we hear a lot about that in terms of the Kansas City, Missouri School District. How serious a problem do you see the provisional status of your district's accreditation?
It is our number one issue right now. Over the last year, we've been working to try to DESE, or the Department of Early and Secondary Education, has revised their formula as far as what we need to get back to full accreditation. So we're looking at attendance, and we've got a new attendance policy in place that helps not only call students, call parents, write letters home, but send kids to and the parents to truancy court if they get to a certain level. We're looking at graduation rates. We're looking at college and career readiness. All of those things are focusing in on trying to get our accreditation back, but that's not really even just focusing in on the academic side of things. We've got a lot of training programs in place for teachers. We've got a lot of tutoring in place as well for the students that are falling behind, and we're really focusing in on those students that are below basic so that they can get back up to basic, proficient, and advanced.
And what is the next step in the process in terms of accreditation? Either one of you, I guess, can answer that, Dan. When's the next check on the district's readiness?
Well, the next time, so we're taking the MAP scores, which is the Missouri Assessment Placement scores, in April of this year. And we should have those scores either August or September of this year. At that point, we'll know how we've been doing. But frankly, we probably – I don't envision that we're going to get out of provisional accreditation this year. It took a long time to get us to where we are today. It's going to take us a little bit to get us out of the situation that we find ourselves in. I would envision that it's going to take probably at least 3 years to get back up from provisional accreditation to full accreditation. But I look at it as not just a flash in the pan, but a continuous steady climb as long as we focus in on the academic issues in this district and not get sidetracked by everything else that's going on.
Well, and I wonder, Steve, if you might help us sort of put these two stories together. I mean, is it unfair to link some of the financial management problems that the audit revealed with the educational situation in Hickman Mills?
Well, I think it's fair to say that, you know, the audit doesn't help the school board's image across the state, although, you know, some of the message that's coming from the auditor is, you know, in the last few months, the cooperation has improved. But a lot of the things that the auditor looked at are patterns of behavior in some parts of the administration and among some board members that seem to deal more with the business affairs of the district rather than the educational performance of the district itself.
But over indirectly, at least, money invested in those business affairs is money that's not being invested in education.
Right. A dollar that's spent replacing missing iPads is a dollar that's not spent in curriculum.
How much are these issues coming up in your campaign and the campaign of your opponents for these 10 contenders for three spots on the board, Dan?
We have a number of candidate screenings or candidate forums that we do, and they talk about the audit all the time. It is a component of it. We talk about a number of other things, school safety, what we've talked about with parents coming into the district. But no, the audit is a primary focus. And I envision that over the next two candidate forums that we have, we'll be having them next week, the 26th and 27th. This is going to be a primary focus as well. I think that there are some people that are running that don't want to talk about it or think that it's just going to – the public is going to ignore it. I don't believe so. I think we need to tackle this issue head on.
And Steve, is this campaign getting more attention in your – you cover politics for The Pitch. You cover school board elections. Is this a little more contested, a little more contentious school board election than most?
Yeah, it's certainly shaping up to be – I mean, if you just look at the number of people who are running, you have 10 people running for three open seats. That suggests a certain level of engagement that you don't always see with these with particularly with Hickman Mills school board elections.
And does it look like there's a movement to get the incumbents out of office?
That remains to be seen. That'll be that's a good question, but we'll find out early April.
We will see. Among those incumbents are school board vice president Dan Osman, who joined us today, as well as the former president Breeman Anderson. Thanks to you, Dan, for being here with us.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to Steve Vockrott, reporter for The Pitch, who's been covering this story. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Earlier, we were joined by Amy Garten of the Overland Park Convention and Visitors Bureau and Alan Carr of the Kansas City Convention and Visitors Bureau. You can find information on their websites and information on day trips in Kansas City, as well as on this story, by going to our website, kcur.org. You can subscribe to our podcast there, too. You can hear this conversation again, and you can access any of our previous shows. You can also follow us on Twitter. We're at KCURCST. Hope you'll join us tomorrow when we explore what happens to foster children once they turn 18. Stay tuned now for Up to Date. They're coming up with a look at the situation in Crimea, with a conversation with a Ukrainian professor at KU and a KU graduate who teaches English in Kiev. Our Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton with Christy Garten and Kate Baxendale. Bill Anderson is executive producer. I'm Brian Ellison. This is KCUR.